Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund. Live from the University of Minnesota, you are listening to Radio K's Culture Q, the Twin Cities Arts and Cultural Program, providing you the stories of Minnesota that you won't hear anywhere else. I'm your host, Matt Curtis, and thank you so much for joining us on this Father's Day. Writer John Green once said that the nature of fatherhood is doing something that you're unqualified to do, but then you become qualified while you do it. I suppose I could say the same for this job. When I, like many of us here, walked into Radio K for the first time, I didn't know how to be a journalist or a broadcaster or anything like that. And yet here we are, learning on the job, becoming qualified, and with the help of our dads when we need it. Tonight we say goodbye to a qualified member of Culture Q while we say hello to another. Nathan Gerdes sings his heart out for the last time and talks with metal vocalist Parker Lemke, travels the world of comics and looks into their presence in Minneapolis, and new music reporter Aaron Bolton stays up past curfew and visits the Northern Spark Festival. And it starts right now on Radio K's Culture Q.
Look across the entire spectrum of popular music and ask ourselves, where do we find the people who are working just as hard as a classical musician would be at the piano or the oboe or operatic singing? It really is in the world of extreme metal.
The idea of Northern Spark is to turn the city into a gigantic participatory arts experience for one night, and to really showcase the cultural resources that we have here.
I love Japanese manga, I love European albums. A lot of American comics tend to be translated, but you know, the other way around, it's not as much. In some small way, I'd like to address the balance and bring a little bit more work from outside.
Wish on me mine, it is the chocolate chip kind. Me look at you and me tell, you may have snickerdoodle. Me trade me soul for a bite, me spell it out black and white. Me look at you.
Metalheads hear all the time, I like the music, but I just can't stand those monstrous vocals. Metal vocalists can be hard to listen to, and even harder to understand. But there's no depth to the style that one might realize. Nathan Gerdes tries to help people overcome the biggest hurdle in appreciating heavy metal in his final piece as Culture Q's music reporter.
So share it, maybe. Hey, me just met you. And this is crazy. But you got cookie. So share it, maybe.
I was really terrible when I first started, and didn't really have like a very good technique down. I would like constantly kind of scream myself hoarse or whatever, and then I sort of figured out that there's a way to do it to where you don't really like hurt your voice as much.
This is Matt Joyce, lead vocalist for Invidiosis and other local metal bands. I met with him in his northeast Minneapolis home to counter some of the stereotypes that keep people from respecting metal vocalists, including the pervasive notion that it's just screaming, anyone can do that.
Certainly with, like, Invidiosis songs, I have to practice the stuff pretty frequently to, like, stay on top of just the different syllable placement and, you know, just to make sure it sounds right, not getting off beat, not getting off time, not getting winded, or... I mean, try it out sometime, see how far you make it into, like, a metal song without, you know, just losing your voice completely or, like, coughing or hacking. I mean, it's almost sort of like comparable to, you know, being a classically trained singer where you have different pitches and different techniques to achieve these different sounds and really are using these vocal styles that require a lot of like precision and timing and effort, really. It's not just like some thing that they just are doing like atonally over the music.
For a more academic viewpoint, I stopped by the U of M's School of Music and talked to musicology professor Peter Mercer-Taylor. Primarily a Mendelssohn scholar, he also teaches rock history classes and has published academic papers on everyone from REM to Cradle of Filth.
We look across the entire spectrum of popular music and ask ourselves, where do we find the people who are working just as hard as a classical musician would be at the piano or the oboe or operatic singing? It really is in the world of extreme metal. There's all kinds of music that is not immediately listenable, but which people who are sort of acclimated to that music have decided to appreciate. And I think we should remind ourselves that to an outsider, Stravinsky's Rite of Spring is not very much fun to listen to, but it's thought of as perhaps the greatest piece of art music written in the 20th century. And so I think we owe extreme metal the benefit of the doubt in the same way.
So, it's obvious that there's more to it than just random shouting, but that doesn't make it any easier to listen to. Matt suggests building up a tolerance for the vocal style and then working your way down.
The best way to go about it is just getting into the classics and Slayer and Megadeth and Metallica and whatever, and then as you kind of develop more, like, once you can listen to thrash and don't think anything of it, then death metal's kind of the next, like, progression for a lot of people.
Our professor, however, recommends looking at the music a little more holistically.
And so we're dealing with a form of popular music that is not about vocal melody. And there can be melodies that exist elsewhere in the texture. The entire genre of melodic death metal, involves guitars playing all kinds of melodies, keyboards at times. There are ways that melodies insinuate themselves. But we don't tend to turn to the growling vocalist for melody. And so it's one of those genres, of which we have more and more these days, rap is a very important one, in which we don't see melody as the sort of central feature of the vocal performance.
Even with all this advice, do you still find yourself having trouble getting past the vocals? Well, maybe that's part of the appeal.
In a sense, of course, rock music was always about revolting against something. It was always about sticking it to the man. And it seems to me that extreme metal is just a place where we see the continued evolution of that tradition. Music that really will strike people as confrontational, as extreme in some sense.
You'll see in metal a lot, it's not really a lot of, like, half measures. Like, there's not a lot of people that are doing it to be, like, cool and get famous, because that's kind of like an oxymoron. You can't, it doesn't happen too often.
Metal has always been an underground genre. Respect these vocalists as musicians, but understand that they also serve to keep the music from reaching a mass popularity. However, if you can acclimate yourself to the culture, the rewards are great. And P.S., don't call it screamo. For Culture Cube, I'm Nathan Gurdes.
And live in studio, we have Nathan Gurdes. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, how are you?
I'm pretty good, man, I'm pretty good. I'm a little bit sad, to be honest.
No, why is that? I think I know, but you tell me.
Well, it's because you're leaving us. You're leaving us for training director at Radio K.
That so. Makes you sad?
Well, yeah, man. I think you've done a great job in these past couple months, and definitely opened my eyes about metal, amongst other things.
Yeah, I definitely had a little bit of a focus on that. That's just because it's the stories I wanted to do or the people I knew to talk to for sources. It insinuated itself into a lot of the reporting, I guess.
I mean, that's like why we do Culture Cue, I guess. We just do the things that we want to do, you know. And
I know, that's absolutely... When I found out I got the new job, I'm like, well, I had other ideas for pieces, but I know I want to get this last piece in because it's one I've wanted to do since I started.
And it was real solid, man. Like, how would you reflect on your time at Culture Cue?
I mean, I think it taught me a lot, mostly just like taught me about things I wouldn't really listen to in terms of radio, like looking at stories more in depth and like seeing techniques and possibilities that I maybe wouldn't pick up on casually, and just like thinking how could I incorporate that into my work, and also just contacting people, reaching out to people, and doing all of this on a deadline is something I haven't had as much experience with before this.
Yeah.
So it was always interesting trying to like get the pieces together and put them together.
Yeah, it's definitely a tricky part of the job. I mean, I know that you were interested in music writing prior to getting the job. Like, how do you think that's changed over time?
I mean, I still like music writing a lot. Like, I still really enjoy writing the fundamentals. I did a good number of those in my time, and those are just really fun. Like, researching a single artist or a genre and condensing it and saying, like, how do I tell their entire story in 5 minutes, or how do I then cut that down to like 2 minutes if I want to do like a quick cue or something like that. So it's that definitely helped that side of the skill. And then just like being able to interview musicians and people, hearing other people talk about music, just helped me see like different perspectives in it and everything.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something about this job that kind of gives you an opportunity just to explore things that you wouldn't be able to otherwise, just by slapping either the Radio K name or the University of Minnesota name and like an email heading can really make a difference between getting access to these people and talking to these people and learning a lot. So that's something that I really like about the job.
Yeah, it was definitely enjoyable, if at times occasionally frustrating, but aren't all jobs.
Yeah, exactly. Like staying up until goodness knows how late on a Friday night, just in a tiny booth editing files. But it's not for everybody.
Well, it was a good time, and now I'm just doing something that I also want to do, teaching people, so no problems with what I did here.
Absolutely not. Well, Nathan, we're going to miss you.
Well, thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
I might be back sometimes. I don't know if I'm bored.
All right.
If I'm bored, I can do stories.
All right, we'll look forward to that then, if that ever happens.
We'll see, but it might.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Nathan.
Yeah, of
great job with your story, and all the best with Train Director, Radio K.
Thank you.
I'll see you in the office. Probably like most days, anyway.
Yeah.
One of the United States' biggest exports is its entertainment. American-made films, television, and music receive wide distribution to the far-flung corners of the globe. But even though domestic media dominates the scene, entertainment from other countries does find a way to trickle in. CultureQ associate producer Parker Lemke spoke with the owner of Minneapolis comics publisher Uncivilized Books about his experiences with bringing international comics to the United States.
When I was really young, comics just really clicked with me.
Cartoonist and comics publisher Tom Kaczynski was exposed to American comics long before he left his native Poland at 12 years old to live in the United States.
There was this English language library there, and they had some Spider-Man and Fantastic Four comics, and I kind of got into those as well.
And the comics he drew as a boy feature many icons of American pop culture. Finding them amongst his vast library of books and comics, however, can be a bit tricky.
This is actually a bunch of old Polish comics here. I don't see any. This is all like a bunch of really old art. Well, this is kind of an early comic, but this is not the good one. But I'll show it to you anyway. It's kind of a cross between Spider-Man and Indiana Jones, and yeah, there's Spider-Man.
His love of characters, stories, and comics originating in faraway places didn't go away when he immigrated to America.
You know, just as when I was in Poland, I was drawn to comics from America. Now that I'm here, I'm also drawn to, I love Japanese manga. I love European albums. A lot of American comics tend to be translated, but the other way around, it's not as much. In some small way, I'd like to address the balance and bring a little bit more work from outside.
He operates Uncivilized Books from the second floor attic of his Minneapolis home. A tight space given its packed shelves and slanted ceiling.
What the procedure is.
Whoa. Well, this
yeah,
is it.
Watch the walls.
Though modest in size, Uncivilized Books has already published critically lauded comics from Europe. It was recently nominated for Best U.S. Edition of International Material at the 2014 Will Eisner Comic Industry Awards for localizing the French graphic novel Incidents in the Night, an L.A. Times Book Prize finalist.
It's by David B., who is a very famous French cartoonist. The main character becomes obsessed with this 19th century journal called Incidents in the Night, and he finds one issue of it, and he tries to find other issues. He realizes that there's this kind of massive, bizarre conspiracy hiding behind the editorial board of this magazine.
He originally didn't think he'd end up publishing a book by one of his favorite international authors.
David Bay, I thought, for me, would be essentially out of my league, you know? But I was really surprised at that work, this particular work, nobody had any dibs on it. So I put a proposal together and just kind of went for it.
Tom Kaczynski hopes to continue building his reputation as a publisher of international comics in America. In a way, he's following in the path of Kim Thompson, a longtime co-publisher of the independent comics company Fantagraphics Books, who passed away in 2013.
He's from Europe, spoke multiple languages. When he passed away, you know, comics lost a sort of a champion in general, but also the international comics lost a champion in America.
Fantagraphics editorial associate Christy Valenti told me, however, that the work of bringing over international material will continue.
You know, Kim Thompson is irreplaceable, but I do know that we're making a big effort to not let that happen. I mean, comics can be a pretty small world. There's no bigger advocate for a cartoonist than a cartoonist. Our cartoonist will be like, this is amazing, I discovered this cartoonist, you have to see this.
And as a cartoonist, Tom Kaczynski will continue publishing international comics, carrying on Kim Thompson's work.
You know, he was, when he was young, he was into European comics and sort of brought them over here, and, you know, and I'm sort of, I feel like I'm following in the footsteps, and, you know, if I ever publish, you know, even a quarter of the amount of books that he was able to bring over here, I would be very happy.
He publishes enough through Uncivilized Books to support himself and has made a good impression among his peers in the comics industry.
So I think his line is great. I am really impressed by it. There are a lot of really amazing small press boutique publishers, which is like a one or two person operation.
They tend to add a personalized charm to their books.
If you work with comics, you can almost tell where something is from by the paper and the inks and how they smell.
Uncivilized Books is part of this market of small-scale publishers offering a greater variety of high-quality comics.
I almost want to call it the Tumblr age of comics. There's just so much going on. There's something for you. If it's on the web, if it's in print, the best comics in the world, just at our fingertips.
And more than a few of them can be found on Tom Kaczynski's shelves.
Sometimes it's a challenge to kind of put everything in its place, but I like looking at this stuff, and it's always an inspiration for my own work as well.
For Culture Q, I am Parker Lemke.
Every week, Radio K selects one album to highlight, and this week we have selected The Moon Rang Like a Bell by 100 Waters as our weekly release spotlight. This is the Florida Natives' second full-length release, departing from the sound of the 2014 self-titled debut, and settling in an atmosphere of soft vocals, synchronized beats, and sweeping soundscapes. To read a full review by Sam Howard and download a free track from the album, head to RadioK.org. From 100 Waters, this is Innocent. from 100 Waters, that was Innocence. You can check out the full review by Sam Howard and download a free track from the album on RadioK.org. Minnesotans love their festivals, food, arts, and crafts, and of course the big draws, live music and such. The Northern Spark Festival in Minneapolis did offer all those things last night, despite the rain, though not in the most conventional format. Aaron Bolton checked out the festival to see what makes it a standout festival to a city that loves celebrating arts and culture.
A few days before the festival, I had a moment to speak with Associate Director Sarah Peters, not only about what Northern Spark would offer this year, but their expectations as well.
For those who don't know, what exactly is the Northern Spark Festival?
Northern Spark is an annual Dusk to Dawn multidisciplinary collaborative arts festival that takes place on the second Saturday of June in Minneapolis. The idea of Northern Spark is to turn the city into a gigantic participatory arts experience for one night, and to really showcase the cultural resources that we have here. It's about seeing the city in a new light. It's going to places that you thought you knew, only to find them a side of a building lit up by an artist projection, or find artists dancing underneath a bridge, or an 8-hour-long musical performance on West River Parkway. Things like that. A sense of wonder. We're bringing a sense of wonder to Minneapolis for a night.
Artistic and festival director Steve Dietz is the creator of this sense of wonder. But Northern Spark did not come without experience or inspiration. Steve is inspired by the Europe-based festival White Night and is also the creator of the 01 Festival in San Diego. To get a better idea of what Northern Spark had to offer for music, I asked Sarah about some of the more interesting events that were set up around town. Looking over the events here, I see you guys are doing a launch party. Is this the first year of that?
We've had one every year. This is the first one that we're selling tickets to really publicly. First, they were just VIP parties, and now they're launch parties, so anyone can go who wants to buy tickets. That event does function as a fundraising event for the festival, and we have really fantastic food and drink, and Dosh is providing a soundscape for the party.
For those who did not attend the launch party, the night started with the opening ceremony in a more traditional concert setting.
The Mu Daiko, the Taiko drumming group here in the Twin Cities, that's part of Mu Performing Arts, is one of the musical acts there. So those are just huge, powerful kind of call to action drumming that will happen. And then Mayor Hodges will join us on stage and say some words, and to be followed by Girl Party that will be playing when it's really dark and the festival is really glowing.
One of the more interesting events that I found that you were able to just observe was at Orchestra Hall. It was musically controlled projections on both the ceiling and the backdrop within the performance hall.
The artists have taken all these measurements on the inside of the hall and set it up so that whoever's playing on stage will activate images that will be projected onto the ceiling of that space. Dosh is one of the musicians who will be activating the space.
From Dosh to the Minnesota Orchestra, all sorts of artists activated this space for a very eventful and colorful concert experience. On the more interactive side of things was a project called Gossip Orchestra, in which there was a pad interface for any audience member to conduct 20 musicians surrounding them, activating and deactivating any musician at any given time. So can anyone participate in this? Everyone can just use this pad to conduct the musicians surrounding them?
Yeah, yep. It's a participatory project. There'll probably be a line, so you may have to wait. But from what I witnessed last year, people just gathered around and watched for hours and hours, and then people would take turns actually conducting the orchestra.
Northern Spark presented some unique challenges for artists, not only combining heavy visual aesthetics with interactive performances, but controlling their noise as well due to citywide noise ordinances.
It's an opportunity for artists who work with sound or musicians to find a way to do their work without being a concert.
Many exhibits experienced the sound issue. Some were Oculus, performance by Venus de Mars accompanied by dance and light projections, as well as Happenstance, silent films accompanied by live musicians. And lastly, Per Aspera ad Astra, a Gary Coates performance in a spaceship-themed space with the audience controlling the ship through knobs and levers. All exhibits arose to the challenge of the sound, as well as fitting into Northern Spark's visual light-based art theme. At roughly 5:30 this morning, the festival came to a close, all coming together for a pancake breakfast to reflect upon their eventful night, before going home and finally catching some sleep. For Culture Q, I'm Aaron Bolton.
You've been listening to Culture Q on Radio K, airing every Sunday at 6 p.m. bringing you all the stories within the Twin Cities that you won't hear anywhere else. Tonight you heard the voices of Nathan Gurdis, Parker Lemke, Aaron Bolton and Matt Curtis. Our producers are Amy Friedman, Parker Lemke and Katie Bolin. Our music reporter is Aaron Bolton. Our culture coach is Sarah Lemanchek, and I'm host and managing editor, Matt Curtis. You can find us on RadioK.org, PRX and iTunes. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. See you next Sunday at 6 p.m. and thank you for listening.